forget how big this bell is. A little too hard.
Welcome to the New to Practice group.
My name's Kevin. This is my teaching partner, Carol. Is there anybody here at Insight Santa Cruz for the first time? All right. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Thank
you. Cool. So the format of this group, how we normally do it, it's always subject to change, though. We like to begin each week just by going around and allowing you to put voice into the room. And we'll do that, and then we will do some meditation. We'll do a short guided meditation, and then we'll have a break for some Q&A, if there is any, and then we'll allow for another short meditation, a silent meditation. Get up, maybe do some movement, a little Qigong perhaps. And then I will be offering a Dharma talk tonight, roughly 20 minutes or so. And again, we'll open up for Q&A after that. And and we'll call it a night. So to get things started, we can pass around our talking stick here. And if you're not comfortable with putting voice into the room, you're more than welcome just to say pass or say your name and pass it on. That's totally fine. But I'd also like to ask the question, if you were here last week and you got to hear Carol give her lovely Dharma talk about the first precept of non-harming, not taking life, I'm curious if you had an opportunity to practice with that over the past week, if it came up at all. Maybe you were more paid more attention to what you put on your dinner plate. Maybe you didn't crush that spider when you first saw it. Maybe you were able to escort it outside instead. If it came up at all, and if it didn't, that's totally fine. And if you weren't here last week, or if you would rather just talk about how your practice is going, I would love to hear about that as well. So whether you practiced with non-harming this past week, and or just how's your practice going? What's up?
Doris, I wasn't here. I'm Patty, and I was there, and I did a little bit of practice, but the most interesting part was that I spent some time with my granddaughters, who are 8 and 10, and I can't remember how it came up, but we got into a whole discussion about non-harming. Really fun.
Nice.
That's the best kind of practice.
Hi, I'm Aaron. I think a lot about the ants. I got quite the ant problem, and trying to balance that with when my cats eat the ants. And, thinking about that a lot, but it's a good one for sure. Disciplining,
Thanks, Aaron.
Hi, my name's Clover, and I was on here last week.
My name is Lenka, and I also was on here last week.
My name's JD. I'm feeling pretty calm this time around. Last week I remember being much more anxious before the talk and meditation. I guess I didn't have a lot of practice with the non-harm, but I definitely heavily resonated with the talk about rats. I've had a situation probably maybe 6 to 8 months ago. It was a pretty intense story. I'll spare you guys all the details, but definitely made me think of some more creative, less harmful ways to deal with those guys in the future.
Hi, I'm India. I hadn't actually practiced until yesterday when I came to the group here yesterday. I'm in a lot of grief and I just couldn't So I've been doing the non-harm to everything else but myself. And so I feel like I've been harming myself by running away from myself. But yesterday I was a big group, and I know I just felt super supported just being with everyone. I just felt safe for me to close my eyes and allow myself to be with myself. I've actually had the first peaceful night I've had in weeks.
Hi, my name is Grace. I wasn't here last week and I haven't practiced meditation in a while, but last time I did it, it felt really great, and I'd like to continue with that. And would you like to put your voice in the room as you're entering in?
Sure.
Your name.
Can I hear her? Did she say?
Yeah, Crystal.
Oh, Crystal.
Yeah, I'm Crystal.
Great, great. We were sharing whether or not you were here last week, or and if you had a chance to practice with the non-harming, or just how your practice is going in general.
Well, I only come every other Wednesday, so
okay.
I was not here last week.
Cool.
I think my personal practice could use some work.
Thanks, Crystal.
Yeah. Well, you're here tonight. We're all here tonight, so welcome everybody.
So we've decided that with these training precepts, we're going to be talking about them for the next 4 weeks, but next week we won't be here, so next 5 weeks. And that when we talk about the precepts, it's really very helpful to combine them with a loving kindness practice. It worked out well last week. And so while we're doing the precepts, we're going to work with loving kindness. It's a valid meditation all by itself. It's not just something that we tack on to the end of meditations. And we think it's good with the precepts because as we bring up the ways in which we would like to behave, we can be very critical and judgmental, not only of ourselves, but of others. And the loving kindness really fosters this appreciation for ourselves, and we can never have too much of that, I think. So first I'd like to begin with just a posture for meditation, helping those new to practice with a posture. And so if you wouldn't mind standing up. And a straight back is a helpful way to sit in meditation. It's a helpful way to balance and to sit. And so the way we lengthen our thoracic, or the upper spine, is by raising our arms up in front of us and kind of feeling the shoulder blades dropping back, sliding down the back, close to the back. So bringing those shoulder blades down and stretching that thoracic spine up, and kind of as you lower your arms gently, trying to maintain that posture in your back as you gently take your seat. Just to keep that in mind, and if you ever need to, you can just kind of raise your arms to get that length in your thoracic spine once again. And other tips on posture are just to feel the floor rising up to meet your feet. If you need a cushion from the rack over there to make it so that your feet do touch the floor, you're perfectly welcome to use any of that, any of those props over there. And just relaxing your hands in your lap, you sometimes we use a pillow for that too, because your hands fall in some place that they either hang or, you know, make your shoulders droop or whatever. You can relax your hands on the knees or in your lap or on a pillow. And particularly for loving kindness meditation, we want to remain alert, but we also want to be kind to ourselves. We want to be comfortable. And so if at any time during the meditation, you need to shift position, that's perfectly fine. It's fine to stand up. Meditating while standing is a perfectly okay thing to do. And we even have mats over in the corner there for lying down meditation. And so we can check in with our posture throughout the meditation too, and that kind of keeps our mind in the present moment on what we're doing, instead of wandering off. So I'm going to take a few minutes now to guide you through a classic loving kindness meditation. And I'm actually going to take a minute to pass out these papers. They're helpful for to take home with you, so you'll have some phrases to work with on your own, and know who to send your loving kindness to. that we're going to practice tonight a classic form, a traditional form of loving kindness, and there are many different forms. Tonight I'm going to be using, there are two sides to this handout, and I'm going to be using a few words about metta, that slide. I'm going to be working from that side. If you wanted to check your thoracic spine once again and settling in. I find it takes a few minutes for my body to settle in before my mind, I can expect my mind to settle in too. So sensing into where the body's making contact, the floor with the chair, with other body parts. And turning your attention inward. And noticing how you feel. Perhaps this is the first time you've stopped all day. Just noticing what's going on inside and letting it be. And then as we shift from our posture, turning the mind toward the breath. We call the breath the anchor of our practice, as it is always here with us. And it's always happening in the present moment. So throughout meditation, when the mind wanders, throughout your day, when you're feeling a little scattered, you are always invited to turn your attention toward the breath. And just notice where you sense it the most in the body, which could be the tip of the nose, or the back of the throat, or the shoulders and the belly as they rise and fall, or someplace completely different. Wherever it is perfectly okay. Dropping the shoulders from the ears And just resting awareness on the breath for a few breaths. And wandering mind happens. It happens to everybody, and it's just what the mind does. There's no sense beating yourself up about a wandering mind. Instead, gently lift it when you notice that it's wandered and return to the focus of our awareness, which is the breath at this moment, and then soon shifting to loving kindness. And now lifting the breath, the mind, from following the breath and bringing it to your heart center. Allowing the breath to move in and out from your heart. I like to place my hands over my heart. It kind of brings a warmth and attention there that helps me stay connected. And imagining a flame at the heart center that the breath is fanning. Creating more warmth. This is an opportunity to bring attention to our heart center. We may not even be aware that we have built a wall up around the heart to protect ourselves. Taking a moment to soften the edges as we are safe. And we are here now, and all is well. And traditionally, we offer loving kindness first to our own selves, because we so often overlook ourselves. But it really is an important quality to offer ourselves in order to authentically offer it to others. So noticing what arises, if there's any resistance to the suggestion that you offer some kind attention, some loving kindness to your own self. Sometimes it helps to imagine yourself or conjure up the image of yourself as a small child. And wishing yourself well, with these traditional phrases that you can say silently to yourself. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be healthy. And may I care for myself with ease. Allowing those words to sink in. And now expanding our heart center to include our teachers or benefactors or mentors, someone who has helped guide us along the way, bringing up the image of a teacher, a benefactor, a mentor, and wishing them well. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. And may you care for yourself with ease. And shifting attention from our heart center, from our teacher, benefactor, or mentor, toward a friend or loved one. Bringing up the image of someone who you'd like to send your loving kindness to, and wishing them well. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. May you care for yourself with ease. Now expanding our heart center to include a neutral person, someone we may not know very well, we may see occasionally, someone we may not have feelings about, bringing up the image of a neutral person and wishing them well. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. And may you care for yourself with ease. And now we include in our heart center someone we're having difficulty with. Noticing whatever resistance may arise with wishing this person well. And know that that is perfectly okay. And maybe actually a sign that your heart is softening. But perhaps even just for this moment, acknowledging that even this person may want the same things we do, and wishing them well. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. And may you care for yourself with ease. And then we spread our loving kindness, our heartwarming attention and appreciation out toward all beings around the world, wishing all beings well. May you be happy. May you be safe. May you be healthy. And may you care for yourself with ease. Bringing this loving kindness meditation to a close by wishing all beings coming to the end of suffering, not leaving one behind. So I'd like to open it up to questions or comments about that traditional style, loving kindness meditation.
I think it was very helpful to center that from the heart. Mind, because the mind can think of a whole bunch of people to send good wishes to, but to slow and thoughtfully start from the heart is very helpful to me.
Yeah, good. Well, good. So you'll get some more practice now in the silence. And last week, we, in the silent portion of our loving kindness or metta practice, we focused on ourselves, bringing this attention to ourselves. And so we thought that this week we would choose the second person on the list, which is a teacher, a benefactor, or a mentor. And you're welcome to do that. Just focus on that one person for the next few minutes in silence. And you're welcome to use the phrases that were used today, or there are other suggestions on the flip side of that paper that I gave you. Or you're welcome to use your own phrases. You can also choose somebody else to offer your metta to at this time as well. So checking in with the posture. Turning attention inward once again. Resting awareness on the breath. And then when you're ready, shifting attention to the heart center. And sharing loving kindness as you wish. this is the time in the evening when we offer a stretch break. We've been sitting for a while, and it's a great time to use the facilities or get a drink of water if you'd like, and do that mindfully with awareness that there is probably a group happening in the community hall. And I'm happy to lead you in some Qigong, some exercises to just kind of move the energy throughout the body. That can just be done standing near your chair with a little room, a little space. And just beginning by feeling the body in this orientation, standing, and feeling the floor rise up to meet the feet. And perhaps closing the eyes and noticing that just standing here is a balancing posture. You might feel the body sway a little bit. And opening the eyes once again and inhaling, raising the arms up overhead, gathering the energy from the ground and the skies, and then gently lowering down on the exhale. We'll do that two more times. Inhaling. Exhaling. Inhaling. The first exercise is called the big guy. Raising the arms out to the side on the inhale and gently lowering down on the exhale. Big guy. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Keeping the mind on the movement and the breath. Couple more. Just standing in stillness, noticing the effects of the movement on the body. This next one is called embracing the world. Raising the arms out in front of you on the inhale and bringing the palms into the belly on the exhale. Inhale, embracing the world. Exhale. Inhale. Two more of embracing the world. Standing. And next we'll do fireworks in honor of Independence Day next week. And you raise your arms up in front of you on the inhale and out to the side on the exhale. And each time you alternate, your eyes tracing down a different hand. So inhale and exhale, eyes tracing to the left. And inhale, exhale, eyes tracing down to the right. Imagine fireworks. Two more, one on each side. And closing with heaven and earth. On the inhale, gathering up the earth energy. And the energy from the heavens, and on the exhale, bringing that energy down through the crown of the head, the backs of the hands together at the back of the neck, and then inhaling down across the chest again. Hands go behind the body and trace down the back of the legs on the exhale. Inhaling up the inside of the legs. And exhaling around the midsection, the core. Once again, inhaling, exhaling, inhaling, exhaling, inhaling. One last time, inhaling, exhaling, inhaling, exhaling, inhaling, exhaling. Just standing with the palms at the core for a second. For a moment or two, just noticing. And mindfully taking your seat when you're ready.
Thank you, Carol. That was lovely. It was good to move around. So the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about the five precepts, and tonight we're going to continue with that theme. We started out with a general overview of the five precepts and decided that it would be a good idea to look into each precept individually and give each one of them their own Dharma talk. So last week, Carol gave a beautiful talk on the first precept, to abstain from taking life. And tonight, I'll be talking about the second precept, to abstain from taking what is not freely given. And if you haven't been here the past couple of weeks, or if this is the very first time you've ever heard of the precepts, that's totally fine. These can be presented and practiced in any order They're very similar to the Eightfold Path, where it does not need to be practiced in a linear fashion. So we can first review what the five precepts are, in case you've forgotten. The first one is to abstain from taking life, or to put simply, no killing. Second is to abstain from taking what is not freely given, no stealing. Third is to abstain from sexual or sensuous misconduct. The fourth is to abstain from false speech, no lying. And the fifth is to abstain from intoxicants. And it's important to understand that the Buddhist precepts they're not a list of rules just to follow blindly. They're not commandments. They're a set of guidelines to help us live a moral and ethical life. And Carol did talk a little bit about this last week. The Pali word most often translated as morality is sila, S-I-L-A. But sila can also refer to inner virtue, such as kindness or truthfulness. And sila is best understood as a kind of harmony. There's a Theravadan Buddhist teacher, his name is Bhikkhu Bodhi, and he writes, "The Buddhist texts explain that sila has the characteristics of harmonizing our actions of body and speech. Sila harmonizes our actions by bringing them into accord with our own true interests, with the well-being of others, and with universal laws. Actions contrary to sila lead to a state of self-division marked by guilt, anxiety, and remorse. But the observance of the principles of sila heals this division, bringing our inner faculties together into a balanced and centered state of unity." So it's basically saying that by following these precepts and creating this harmonious state, you can get to this balanced and centered way of being. It feels light to me. And when we first begin working with these precepts, we can definitely find ourselves breaking them over and over and over again. It's really important not to get down on ourselves for doing that. We don't want to be adding these additional layers of guilt and shame on top of this practice. We can think of it as something like falling off of a bicycle. We can either beat ourselves up about falling, or we can get back up, hop on that bicycle, and just start pedaling again. So if you are practicing with these precepts and you find yourself breaking them, that's totally fine. Just get up and start again. That's what we do here, again and again and again. The Zen teacher Chosen Beis says, "We just keep on working. We are patient with ourselves, and on it goes. Little by little, our life comes more into alignment with the wisdom that gives rise to the precepts. As our minds get clearer and clearer, it's not even a matter of breaking or maintaining the precepts. Automatically, they are maintained." So let's look at the second precept. To abstain from taking what is not freely given, or to simply put, don't steal. To me, that sounds an awful lot like thou shalt not steal, one of the Ten Commandments. But again, it's really important to remember that the second precept is not a commandment. It's not understood the same way as a commandment. Sometimes I find that it helps to phrase these precepts in a little bit different light, in a way that's it's more supportive and less restrictive. So we can rephrase this second precept as so. To the best of my ability, I will take only what is freely given and vow to practice gratitude and generosity. So instead of "I won't take what isn't freely offered," you can look at this as "I will only take what is freely offered." It's basically saying the same thing, but the second one is it can feel a little bit more inspiring to some. You know, as I said, it's a little less restrictive looking at it that way. And we also threw in the bit about gratitude and generosity, which I will talk about a little bit later here. But first, taking what is not freely offered. So what does that even mean? We can look at stealing specifically, and the law usually defines theft as taking something of value without consent of the owner. Makes sense? It can be anything from taking a candy bar from a grocery store to, you know, breaking into someone's house and taking the items from their safe. Those are pretty obvious examples there, but you know, there's also types of theft that aren't necessarily covered by criminal code. And a couple weeks ago, I mentioned that I work for a big corporate business, and I used to bring home office supplies when my home office was running low. And when I say home office, it has nothing to do with the place that actually pays me to show up to work. So it's a whole separate office. So I would, you know, for example, I would take a box of paper clips home, and you know, not because I can't afford paper clips, but I just never found myself going to the store for paper clips. You know, for a couple of bucks, I could probably buy enough paper clips to last me the rest of my life, but I somehow was able to rationalize that it's okay to take these paper clips because we've got millions of them at this place. It's ridiculous. We'll never run out of paper clips there. But I still took them from work. You know, they aren't part of my salary. They aren't part of my benefits. Somebody had to pay for them, and I know that it wasn't me. You know, as I mentioned, there are a couple bucks. I don't think taking a box of paper clips is necessarily going to hurt this business. But when I took the precept of not stealing and I started practicing with it, and I started looking into my everyday life and the actions that I was doing, that's when it really kind of became clear to me. You know, I could see that what I was doing wasn't necessarily ethical, even though it was, like, in my mind, it was a minor thing, it still was not ethical. And you know, when I would walk out with these paper clips, I wouldn't walk out with them just like shaking them in the air, like going home with paper clips. I would keep them with my personal items, and you know, and definitely make sure they were hidden. I would smuggle them out. If anyone ever like stopped me and was like, "Hey, what do you got in there?" I would definitely, like, I'd make up a story. I wouldn't be completely truthful. So, you know, turning the lens on it that way, I was like, okay, there's something I'm doing here that's not quite moral here. Not quite right. Some situations can definitely be more difficult to navigate. We need to look at taking only our fair share. So when you go to the grocery store, for example, and you go up to the register and they have that take a penny, leave a penny jar, you know, I'm sure we've all, you know, taken one or two pennies when we needed it. And you know, that's totally okay. Those pennies are being freely offered, so it's okay to take a couple here and there. But they're freely offered, so why don't we take all the pennies every time we're there? You know, there's you wouldn't be breaking the law, but there's something that just doesn't quite feel right about doing that. I mean, look at another example of sharing a meal. I mean, imagine getting invited to somebody's house for dinner, and you sit down at the dinner table, and they're passing around the basket of dinner rolls, and you take every single one of them. Something not quite right about that either, right? I mean, there's, again, neither one of those examples are breaking the law. Neither one of those is illegal, but there's this something about taking more than your fair share that doesn't feel right. And that's what's interesting about all this. We find ways to, like, rationalize why it's okay to break rules You know, everyone else does it, or we won't get caught. It's not illegal. You know, as I mentioned, these two examples, you're not breaking any laws, but you're definitely taking advantage of an offer. And to me, it doesn't feel like that's a very skillful act. So another example of stealing that a lot of us probably do and may not be aware of is time theft. And this can definitely be more difficult to recognize as the ones doing the action, but I'm sure we can all think of a time or two where we've been the victim. So if you've ever been on the listening side of a conversation and maybe you've got something to do, somewhere to go, and the other person just won't stop talking. They're in the middle of a story that, I mean, it could have ended several times by now, and they just keep talking. They're just keeping you there. Maybe that's what this Dharma talk feels like. I have someone at work who is just the absolute best at this. And I go into the break room to fill up my water bottle, and when she's in there, I mean, she stops me and she tells me about her kid's peanut allergies and how her father-in-law can't afford his mortgage on his second home, and just like tells me all of these stories and keeps me there for so long. And I struggle with like breaking off the conversation and getting back to my desk. So I'm at the point now where if I'm going down and I see her in the break room, I'll just turn around and just be like, I'm coming back later. I'll come back in a few minutes. And I'm sure there's probably a more skillful way of dealing with that, but I haven't figured it out yet. So, the time theft, it may not seem as damaging as stealing like physical items or, you know, money, possessions, things like that. But for me, to be perfectly honest, I find that my time is way more valuable than my possessions. Time is the only thing that I cannot create more of. And so when I find someone is taking my time, especially when I'm not freely offering it, I do feel like I'm being victimized. And so I use that experience and I turn it around on my interactions with other people now. And I think to myself, like, I try to read their social cues. I'm like, is this person like trying to get out of this conversation? You know, is this the right time? Is it appropriate? I'll even ask now if, you know, I'll ask someone, do you have a few minutes to talk if I want to like start up a conversation? So these are all ways of taking what isn't freely offered, and maybe you're the type of person who doesn't steal. Maybe you don't take more than your fair share, and maybe you are very, very mindful of the time theft topic as well. So then how do we deepen our practice with the second precept if you're already doing all these things? We do so by practicing gratitude and generosity. So the second precept is to refrain from taking what isn't freely given. This training calls on us to realize our clinging and grasping and hoarding. Most of the time it comes from a place of fear where, you know, I find that, you know, I may have some fear of not having enough one day, so I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to take while I can. I'm going to cling to these possessions while they're there. And we know from the second noble truth that craving or clinging is the cause of suffering in life. So if we practice generosity, we're practicing letting go of what we may be clinging to. When we let go of what we're clinging to, we suffer less. So instead of thinking of this precept as what may I not take, we look at it as what may I give. And like everything else in this practice, I think you can take this on as much or as little as you see fit. You may walk out of here and completely commit to the second precept and never steal anything, never take what isn't freely offered. You're going to think about every little thing that you do before you do it, and you're going to be just the best at this precept. Or you may walk out of here and like not even think about this ever again. Be like, whatever. I think the best way to practice those is to, you know, find the middle path, kind of somewhere in between the two. Because you don't want to overwhelm yourself by taking on too much all at once. You also don't want to brush it aside like it's not important, because all of these practices here, it really does take some work. It takes setting an intention, it takes effort, it takes a whole lot of forgiveness and compassion, especially when we break those precepts. So I find it helpful to set my intention first thing in the morning. And because we're busy humans and the mind is so active, I find that I constantly have to go back throughout the day and remind myself of the intention, just resetting it over and over and over again. You can try setting the intention to follow the second precept to a T, or you can just kind of dip your toe in the water and see what it feels like. You know, maybe today you want to work with not taking more than your fair share, and tomorrow maybe look at a different aspect of the time theft. Maybe work with that. Maybe work with a little piece of it every day just to see what it feels like. There's also ways of working with unskillful actions that we may have committed in the past. We can make amends to people that we've stolen from. Making amends is kind of tricky. I mean, if you think that bringing up the past while making these amends is going to create more suffering, either for you or for the person that it involves, then, you know, I would recommend, you know, maybe taking a different approach to that. It's different ways of making amends. So, a couple quick stories. When I was younger, I used to steal beer from Safeway in Aptos. I would go in there, and it was, you know, the early 90s, and so I had baggy shirt and baggy flannel on and baggy pants, and I would go in, and I would take, you know, a couple 40s, and I would shove them down my pants so they would be held in the waistline, and my baggy shirt and flannel would cover it up, and I would walk out. And did that for a number of years, again and again and again. So now, when I'm practicing and, you know, looking at that, and I feel like I want to make amends, but I feel like if I were to go into Safeway and talk to the manager and be like, hey, look, this is what I did. I want to give you, like, you know, a couple $100 for all the beer I stole over the years. That may not work out so well. So I really had to think about, well, how can I make up for this act? Because I really felt like, you know, I needed to do something to make up for this. So I really don't want to, like, talk trash about Safeway or anything like this, but the Safeway in Aptos is god-awful. It's so hard to do grocery shopping there. It's very, very one of my least favorite places to be, let alone shopping for groceries. So I normally avoid that place like the plague. And I decided that maybe one way that I can make it up to them is by starting to shop there. I can give them my business. So that's what I do. I don't go there every time, but when I feel like I want to practice making amends the Safeway, I'll bite the bullet and I'll go in and I'll do my grocery shopping there. I give them my money today because of everything that I took from them in the past. But again, you need to really, like, give it some serious thought before going down that path. And, you know, we need to check in, make sure that our intentions are in the right place. Under the right circumstances, I think making amends can be really, really freeing and feel really, really good. But in the meantime, I think we can start small and just kind of look at our everyday actions. And one of the things they say is making a living amends is just stopping the action, the unskillful action today, and just from this point forward, just be skillful from here on out. And so that's what I do on a daily basis. I wake up, I review what these precepts are, and I see how I can live with this in my everyday life. So those are my thoughts on how to practice with the second precept. And I'd like to end with a quote by Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Vietnamese Buddhist monk and a Zen master. He says, "Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, I am committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, speaking, and acting. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. And I will share my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in need. Let's just sit for a minute. We've got a little bit of time now for some questions and hopefully answers. Anything about the Dharma talk, about the metta meditation, or really anything about your practice? What's, you know, if anything's coming up you want to talk about, or yeah, whatever's on your mind, it's all good here.
I wanted to bring up something that to add, I think, to the no stealing precept, which is something that is not always super obvious, which is to refrain from taking credit for things that you don't deserve, which can always be tricky, because sometimes, you know, probably most commonly at work or a place like that, where someone else has done the majority of the work, but then the boss or whoever cares just happens to see you finishing up and, great job today, JD, like, way to go, and then you kind of don't mention that you only did 10% of it or whatever. Where you could just be like, oh yeah, I'm just finishing up, Ian actually did most of this, kind of thing.
Stealing accolades.
Yeah.
Not being completely truthful. Yeah. Sounds like you might have some experience with that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy in what I do to take credit. And, the, you know, I'd also work for a very cool corporation, but it's still corporate, and there's, you know, everybody's trying to climb the ladder and get promoted and all that stuff. So I wouldn't say in my job that everybody's like, you know, gunning for everybody else, but, you know, it's subtle things. And you mentioned, you know, when you think you've got the all 360 degrees of a precept, how do you deepen it? And then, so, you know, it's important to kind of realize the subtleties. It's like, oh, on this whole other level, I could totally deepen this practice.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. Thank you.
Yeah, you made me think of it while you were talking about it.
That's what I love the most about these precepts, is that it makes us think about things that we were just sort of walking through our daily lives without bringing our full attention to, and allows us the opportunity to do the best we can, you know, to just shift things a little bit, think about things and how we want to behave, you know, make a choice about how we really want to behave. So much goes on that we just follow the impulse without thinking. And then, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, a lot of what we do in this practice is you know, we talk about waking up or becoming liberated, finding freedom. And really what that freedom is the freedom of choice. It's the freedom to decide how we act, how we respond to whatever is happening. So there's a lot in this life that we don't have control over, but the one thing that we do have control over is how we respond. And so by practicing these precepts, practicing the Eightfold Path, you know, concentrating the mind and starting to bring awareness to emotions as they arise and becoming familiar with them so they don't catch you by surprise, you really do create that space to allow you to make a skillful choice. And that's really the thing that I have found so, so liberating about this is, you know, you can't prevent bad things from happening. You know, feeling sad, feeling angry, feeling betrayed, these are all normal emotions that we're bound to feel as human beings, but our relationship to those feelings and how we respond to them is the freedom of this practice.
And being gentle with yourself.
Yes.
You know, because
yes,
we're going to make mistakes, but it's getting back up on the bicycle, choosing to get back up mm-hmm. on the bicycle and not just saying, oh, forget it. I go again. You know, go wild.
Yeah, I say there's the...
It's a training.
Yeah. Just like a bird needs two wings to fly, this practice also needs two wings. There's the understanding and the compassion. And so, you know, I could talk about this stuff all day long. You guys can read as many books as you want, all of that wisdom. But unless you also meet it with some compassion, you know, your practice won't be complete. So yeah, having that compassion is really, really important. So once you start looking into these things, it's not just like, oh, how am I, you know, what really becomes obvious to me is how often I screw up these things. That's like the most obvious thing to me when I'm doing this. And, you know, God, it's so easy to beat yourself up. So just remember that, you know, every time you catch yourself doing something, every time you catch yourself breaking a precept, or every time you catch yourself lost in thought during a meditation, whatever the case may be, know that that is mindfulness. That's awareness. That's what we're practicing here, is the fact that you can catch yourself in those moments. Because before, we were just sleepwalking through this life. We wouldn't even take notice when we were screwing up. So the fact that we're aware of it, that's a huge, huge step. And it's really helped me to, like, instead of bringing guilt and shame and thinking I'm not doing it right, I've completely just 180'd that and just been like, oh, look at that. Okay, cool. Now I pat myself on the back when I catch myself screwing these things up. So what else is up? How was the meditation practice? Was it, do you find it easy or difficult?
For me, it goes back and forth. It's like one day it feels really easy and it's really deep, and the next day it's just the total monkey mind and you know, making myself sit. I feel like that's all I can manage to do. I don't feel like I do anything very useful other than make myself try. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like life, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, just allowing whatever is there to be, and know that it will change. It'll be different.
Impermanence.
Found that the guided one was much easier. when you're constantly, you know, your mind wanders, but you're still being guided. And so to leave yourself there for any amount of time with no guidance,
it's difficult
in any direction.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's also easier when you're in a group like this. When I'm home all by myself, it's a lot easier for me to think of other things I could do. Oh, I just could put that little laundry in or something like that. It's very easy to get distracted. And that is certainly something that will come with practice, is it's kind of a self-efficacy or self-responsibility, you know, that grows or deepens the more you practice. And so for this new to practice class, we offer that guidance, and then some take the training wheels off and try it for yourself. But a good thing to remember, kind of Kevin just sort of touched on it too, is that when the mind wanders and you notice it, that's the moment that your awareness has woken up. And then bringing the mind back to the focus of your awareness, the heart or the breath, that strengthens, that helps strengthen your focus muscle. So it's just as much a part of the practice as staying right on it every time you bring it back.
I do find that guided meditations can sometimes be a lot easier to stay focused than complete silence, because you do have the freedom just to daydream and go off and do this and do that, and having that sound becomes the anchor of the practice, where every time you hear the voice, you're reminded to come back to the present moment. And so we can, you know, try doing that with the breath as well. That's, you know, one of the tools we teach here is every breath you take is similar to hearing that voice. With each breath, it's a reminder to come back to this moment. Every breath, coming back. A little bit more difficult to do, though.
Right.
At times.
So we'll encourage you to take these sheets on loving kindness or metta practice home with you, and find out what works for you. Both Kevin and I worked for years with the traditional phrases until our own phrases came up that felt more meaningful and more comfortable for us. But it's helpful to have the classics and to be guided. We have some materials up front. The issue at hand is a really helpful book on basic Buddhist practice, and it's by a local teacher and author, Gil Fronsdal. And there's an envelope for any donation you might want to offer for that book, but it is offered freely. There's a little typewritten story on metta practice that you're welcome to. And then just a reminder that everything here at Insight Santa Cruz is offered freely. And yet we do have bills to pay, and if you want to show your appreciation for the teachings, for the center, you're welcome to leave a donation in either one of the baskets at the back of the room. We take checks made out to ISC. We even have a chip reader. And 100% of that donna goes right where it's supposed to.
And there's classes that are offered almost every day of the week here. All of them are offered freely, so feel free to check out the schedule either on our website, or we have some printed out on the desk out there. And I just really encourage you to check out as many classes as you can. There's a ton of great teachers here. We're so lucky to have Insight Santa Cruz here. So, yeah. And just another reminder that we won't be here next week. So you can still sit Wednesday at 6:30, but it just won't be here.
Yeah, so practice loving kindness, maybe. Maybe think about setting an intention early in the day to not cause harm and not take that which is not freely given. We'll see you back here in a couple of weeks. Thank you for your practice.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.